That essay is from Ross Gay's new book, The Book of Delights. Recommend it. It's filled with little nuggets like that. And growing up, I learned a special way to mark time this time of year. Not the Christmas countdown app. Maybe you've heard of that, anyone? But no, I learned to mark time with an Advent calendar. Maybe some of you have tried that. In my family, we had a relatively elaborate Advent calendar, actually. It was homemade by one of our family friends in felt. It was big, like this big by about this big. It hung on the wall. It had all the days of December marked out in green and on the bottom, and a blank space at the top, where each day we would add a piece of the nativity story. See, that by the end of the month, that whole scene of the nativity would be there up at the top. So each day on the bottom was actually a pocket wherein there would be one of those pieces of the scenery or one of the characters and a snippet of paper that would tell a little bit about the story that corresponded to the piece you would put up that day. Also in the pocket, there would be a treat. You know, like a chocolate or a candy cane. Sometimes the really good stuff like Barbie clothes. It was all part of the magic. I mean, the treats, of course, that was magical, but also the repetition, the recreation of the story every year. We knew it so well, but also we loved acting like we didn't know it. Where will Mary and Joseph stay? Where will she have the baby? Were there really dogs in the nativity story? Did they have dogs in ancient Jerusalem? That one was maybe particular to our nativity. But every year we would have these same questions. There's something about repetition like this at the same time each year that helps you with the marking of time. Sometimes Unitarian Universalists can be overly committed to novelty. But there's a wisdom in tradition. Sean's going to speak more about this in a couple weeks, how turning to something familiar at the same time, in the same way, clues in your body and your mind and your heart to the passing of time. And in the telling of these ancient stories, locates you in a greater story too. It's what Ross Gay is getting at, I think, when he talks about taking one's time, as in claiming ourselves in time, to know this day as ours, this moment, this hour, this life as ours, and to know ourselves as a part of a greater arc of all time, past, present, future. Advent calendars and Advent wreaths and just the whole time of Advent are all ways to mark time, both in that countdown sense, but also to mark ourselves, where we are and when we are, in a way that connects us more fully to who we are in time and in life and in that greater story of life. Now, fitting for this Christmas story of a baby arriving at an inconvenient time and an inconvenient place, marking time in Advent seems to me much like the marking of time while pregnant. Right? Pregnancy, too, has countdown apps these days, but even without an app, pregnancy means being constantly aware of time. The months and the weeks and the days remaining as the baby grows, but also the things that you need to do in that time that is left so that you could be ready, even while the whole time knowing that there's pretty much nothing you can do that will make sure that you are ready, which is true. You might think, given that this is the core story of Advent, that the text in Christian churches today, which is the first Sunday in Advent, would be the story of Mary's pregnancy. But basically because of sexism, it's another story. Also about marking time. It's a text that some call the little apocalypse in the Gospels. It's just a little mini apocalypse because Jesus tells everyone in this story that something is coming, so look out, keep awake, he says. Except for he never really says what that something is. Something is coming. So watch out. He says there will be angels with trumpets on clouds, or then he says in the next sentence, there won't be. Instead, maybe it will come without warning, like a thief in the night. So live all the time, he says, ready, be ready all the time, even though there's probably no way to really be ready. It kind of reminds me of this song. You might know it. You better watch out. You better not cry. Better not pout. It's not just Christian households that mark time differently this season, with a sense that we need to get ready for something that's coming. The world around us, the stories within us, deep stories, I mean like childhood stories, create in all of us a sense of urgency, even vigilance sometimes, to hurry and get all the things done, get ready for something is coming. So we shop and decorate, bake and celebrate, sing and gather with family, rush to holiday concerts or school plays, wrap presents, lose the scissors, shovel the walkway, travel cross-country, buy new scissors, trim the tree, pull together end-of-the-year reports, find the scissors you first lost, hurry to office holiday parties, watch the grandkids, light the menorah, ski, not enough, drink hot toddies and eggnog lattes, sometimes too much, fill up on pecan pie and mashed potatoes, and don't forget, pass back and forth the holiday cold. Especially in a year where Thanksgiving is compressed so closely with Christmas, instead of marking time with the steady, intentional presence I learned as a kid through my Advent calendar, the magical marking of time that links when you are with who you are. Many of us instead mark time this time of year with a mad dash of activity and consumption and production until we don't know what day it is or even our own names. I mean, I'd have to guess at least a few of you received the notice about our new worship series, Slow Down, in your email inbox this week, and we're like, you have got to be kidding. It's why when my partner heard that the title of my sermon for this week was Lose Your To-Do List, she responded quickly with, that gives me anxiety. And I bet she's not alone. Right? How many of you would call yourselves a list person? Yeah, me too. I love lists, actually. Lists are a way that we keep track of all those things that need to get done, but that haven't gotten done yet. It's a way to manage that anxiety of all that remains unfinished. Because without a list, you might forget to do the thing by the time that it needs to be done, or entirely, or just as bad, you might obsess about the fact that it's not done yet. And so you turn it over and over and over in your brain with increasing anxiety and adrenaline. Is that just me? The anxious response that we may have to our unfinished things, our unfinished business, is what is known actually as the Zeigarnik effect. Remember, I said a few weeks ago how the brain likes the things to be resolved. Similarly, it likes things to be finished. So that once we start something, our brains want to keep bringing it up over and over again into our short-term memory until it gets done. Now you officially understand the entire Netflix marketing strategy. Next episode. This effect was actually discovered through a study on food servers in restaurants. By noticing how amazingly servers could remember all the details of a table's order, all the way up until the moment when they pay, when after that, every table just blurs together. Russian psychologist Bluma Zeigarnik picked up on this and through a series of studies figured out that before the tables were done, the servers just turned those orders over and over again into their short-term memories with adrenaline and anxiety. But then as soon as they were done, huge relief, they could forget all about it, so they did. This is basically what I was describing earlier, what can happen in the mad dash of holidays of trying to get all the things done until you get to mid-January and you're like, what happened? What did we even do for Christmas this year? Who am I? But of course, it's not just the holidays that we have to figure out how to live with unfinished business. All those things that you know need to get done, but aren't done yet. So much of life is about learning this lesson. Or at least, I'd say it's the lesson that my kids have been trying to teach me every day for the last 14 years, which is indeed the whole of their lives. My children love to come breaking into something that I am trying very hard to finish, whether that's dinner, or my sermon, or a conversation I'm trying to have, anything, whatever I'm trying to get done, checked off the list, and provide me instead with an alternative. They are, as one author put it, a constant invitation to be willingly distracted by the present. Occasionally, I have to say rarely, by some combination of grace and luck, I sometimes manage to relish their lessons. Sometimes, somehow, I manage to remember, as they're offering me that opportunity to be willingly distracted by the present, sometimes I manage to remember that unfinished business is actually a sign that we're doing life right. After all, as Reinhold Niebuhr said, nothing worth doing can be achieved in one lifetime. And so taking our time can also mean letting ourselves take up to-do lists that will take longer than our own lives. Letting ourselves feel a part of a larger arc that will keep moving and dreaming and doing and being long after we are gone. To live with unfinished things means knowing that even at our last breath, we will still be growing and changing and striving, that is still learning, healing, still becoming, that we will still be living our whole lives, which is the hope, right? Unfinished business is a sign that we're still living our whole lives, which is the hope and the beauty, except no one told that to our brains, because our brains still love all things to be resolved. And so they continue that work all the time to try to get us to clean up loose ends, whether we're talking about unfinished holiday shopping or unread emails or even unresolved relationships. All this unfinished business can occupy a huge amount of our mental energy and create an inflated sense of urgency, whether we even realize it or not. It gives us a sense that we'll never have enough time, which means that we could never really relax, let alone loiter, because we need to hurry and get stuff done, whatever it is that we've left undone, especially things that we've actually started, even if that's in a hypothetical way. Those things that you spoke about earlier in the community time, those things that you've written down on one to-do list, and then transferred them to another to-do list, and then another, with the guilt growing with every transfer and the dread of not having done it, the needing to do it, the wanting to get it done. All of these things turn over and over in our brains, which is why it's true, I believe, that we may be better off losing our to-do list. Don't panic. Because what I mean is, just think with me, what happens when you lose your to-do list? Maybe like me for a moment, you freak out for a minute, but then you take a deep breath and you pull out a clean piece of paper and you start from the top and you ask yourself, what is it that I need to do? Now, if you want to torture yourself, you try to remember what was on your old list and get confident that you're probably forgetting something. Or instead, and this is my invitation to you, not just in December, but across the whole of our lives. Instead, you can open that question up in a fuller way so that you access the deeper thought processes, that is the slow thinking parts of your brain, your heart, your body, The parts that will allow you to answer the question as if for the first time. The parts of yourself that knows itself in time and that knows in a deeper way what it would really mean to take your own time. The invitation of this season and its challenge is to linger here in this slow space. To remember the dream that is just yours, a dream that lives in your inhale and your exhale, and the dream that will go on long past your last breath. A project that you will spend the rest of your life not finishing. This is the thing to record on your new to-do list. Record it first and then record it again and again, because in this life, it is inevitable that you will have unfinished business. But in that, it matters what we leave undone. This is what the Zeigarnik effect teaches us most of all. Whatever is left on our to-do list is what is left on our hearts. And so we need to be careful about the work that we pick up, the work that we begin, the work that we call ours, because it will be what our brains turn over and over and over again, which, if it is the right thing, can be for the good. After all, any big, complicated achievement, any work worth doing, relies heavily on the obsessive nature of the Zeigarnik effect. It is the opportunity of this season to mark time in this slower, more intentional way, to know when we are in a way that connects to who we are, so that we can know long after the light returns and the walks are clear and dry that we are not perpetually out of time, but that we are held in time, connected and whole and enough. May it be so. Amen.